Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, as you can see, I've been kicked out of the studio for technical reasons and I've come in here, but that's all right because I've got a good guest for you to make up for it. I'm joined by Michael Rayners, lawyer. Thank you for coming on, Michael.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
Now, you are part of a bit of a team, a bit like the A-team, but for free speech.
I mean, that's very kind of you to phrase it that way, yes. But there is a team of us who have put together a recent piece of proposed model legislation, which is designed after about at least a decade for each of my co-drafters of staring at this problem that we've been having in this country, picking out the specific legislation that has caused it, and then attempting to skip the consultation step that lots of legislation and indeed think tanks get caught in and go straight to the solution. And that team that you've described is myself, Preston Byrne, who has been a fantastic voice for First Amendment protections in the US and is a dual qualified lawyer. He's also a solicitor here. And then Elijah Granite, who is a scholar of considerable breadth on a variety of different jurisdictions and has basically taken an eye to it after Preston and I bashed the thing together. And he has a very keen understanding of what the Office of Parliamentary Counsel usually brings to the table when they scrutinize a bill, what flies and what doesn't, and has smoothed over this thing with, I would say, aplomb and made the thing look rather beautiful too.
So that's good. So you've got a solution, but I suppose we ought to establish that we've got a problem.
Yes, always best to start with that, I guess.
So you're absolutely right, and I can't say I've read it word for word, but I've had a good look, and it does appear to be very specific. I mean, it's very, you know, we need to do exactly this law and so on. But I mean, first of all, let's get to, so do we have a problem with free speech in this country? Can we make that case?
I'd suggest that we have a bigger problem than even the case is being made at the moment. You've got a lot of free speech organisations here. You've got things that are more left-wing and censorship and sort of mass observation oriented, like Big Brother Watch. You've also got the sort of famous Free Speech Union, Toby Young's outfit, which presents itself as an insurer for speech in many ways to its membership. You have a few other organisations too, but they all have a bit of a different angle, and none of them are, I think, presenting how bad the problem is across all of their areas of interest.
Well, and you, even with those guys, it's very noticeable. I mean, I forget Big Brother Watch, so I kind of, well, I'm on the right, so I tend to focus on the Toby Young one.
Sure.
It's very noticeable that he just doesn't take certain cases, and a lot of people are crying out, well, why aren't you doing that? But nevertheless, we shouldn't have to be reliant on a pressure group to bail you out of trouble once you've got in trouble for just saying something.
And that's the purpose of taking the fix to the earlier stage of before you've even got into trouble, looking at what are the pieces of legislation that put people there.
Mm.
And there's quite a lot of them. It's not always an obvious thing. In the Free Speech Union's defense, not that they necessarily need it, they're the preeminent sort of free speech organization in this country. They don't necessarily have the resources to deal with the sort of magnitude of cases, both on employment grounds, regulatory law grounds, criminal law stuff. And therefore, when they do say, we can't take this, there'll be a bit of angling for can we fundraise on it, certainly. But they also, they don't have limitless funds and resources to do this stuff. And
well,
the problem is bigger than what they've got the resources to address.
And actually, you just raised a point, the employment stuff as well. Because, I mean, I've been thinking about the people who just get slammed up in jail for saying something.
That's the high watermark of speech conviction.
But actually, no, you're right. There are many other layers that chip in before that. But let's start at the high one. People getting jailed for saying stuff. Does that happen in this country?
That absolutely happens in this country. I would say that if you get together all potential recorded, both reported, warning given, caution given, arrest made, conviction made, all reported crime, about one-fifth of it is all expression and speech-based.
So one-fifth of people arrested?
One-fifth of all recorded crime. So not one-fifth of people arrested.
Okay, but one-fifth of recorded crime
concerns speech and expression.
Is speech.
Yes. And that includes the unpopular speech.
Right.
That includes things that would be an offensive piece of media or something like that. But that is one-fifth of all recorded crime.
Good God.
And I don't think we hear that statistic enough. I find that what we do hear is we hear sometimes an article I wrote, statistics in that, are quoted widely nowadays. And there's a Times newspaper, Freedom of Information request, that was fairly recent, that found about 12,000 arrests are taking place under a specific part of an act. And that's been reported on a lot.
So, run that by me again. Did you say 12,000 arrests for...
So I believe that's
just one part of it.
One part of the Public Order Act, and also for some of the 1988 Malicious Communications Act arrests. So there's about 12,000 arrests a year under those, but they're not capturing the full picture. And I think that that's quite important that we understand the magnitude of the problem. And of course, we're only on criminal now, Dan, which is the high watermark. Wait until we get to regulatory and employment.
Okay, but I'm still kind of stunned. I mean, I knew the problem was bad, but 12,000 people arrested for something that they said, and we're still looking at the top of the iceberg here.
Absolutely. I mean, the Ministry of Justice's own figures for convictions, not arrests,
yes,
under the Public Order Act 1986, they put them at between 15,000 and 18,000 a year. Convictions under the one act, so that's section 4, yes. 4A and 5, because I'm discounting in that number riot, violent disorder and affray, because those aren't speech and expression offences. You're still looking at 15 to 18,000 convictions annually under one act, namely the Public Order Act 1986, which our bill suggests we repeal, of course.
Yes, I can. That's why I'm still slightly stunned by this, but okay, and how many? Because I don't know. Am I a free speech absolutist or not? I mean, I can imagine scenarios. I can imagine. I don't know. I go out and I say, this person I don't like. Here's his home address. I want you to go and kill him. And I whip up people and say, this guy, for whatever reason, you must go and murder him. Here's his address. Off you go. That. I'm kind of fine if that person gets prosecuted. Likewise, if I say something about you that seriously damages your professional career or something, I'm also okay with libel charges being brought and that kind of thing. So, do we have any sense of how many of these cases are things that I might actually be sympathetic to, and how much is expressing an opinion that another person doesn't want to hear?
Of that 1.2 million recorded criminal offences,
yes,
I'd say about a third of it most of the public would be sympathetic to. And I include that's a full calculation that I've done of all the possible speech and expression-based offences.
Yes.
And I wouldn't be sympathetic to about two-thirds of it as well. I think most people aren't actual free speech absolutists when they're put down to the they're put down to the grindstone of the thing, and you find that a lot of it actually is sort of things that would be regarded as obscene and, you know, involve children and that sort of thing. But they are a form of expression. Now, Keir Starmer likes to use this point to then justify taking out all three-thirds of that expression. But about a third of that 1.2 million recorded criminal instances are going to be things that most people would say that's nonsense.
So there's direct incitement... very gratuitous stuff about children.
Which we keep protections in that bill, despite the fact we've repealed quite a lot of stuff. Those things should still be criminal. They are under the First Amendment in America, which we tend to think of as being, you know, the archetypal legal benchmark of what free speech absolutely
is. Yeah, if I'm vaguely right, there might have been like a child pornography issue that went before the Supreme Court, and it was like, that's not okay under the First Amendment, and I suppose direct incitement, they still rule that out.
Still totally ruled out, yeah. I think it's frequently misunderstood that the First Amendment protects that kind of speech, which it doesn't, that is still criminal there. So we're not looking with this bill to introduce those sorts of things.
Okay.
We're looking to introduce a fix to the ability for, say, I take issue with your political beliefs, for example, and I report you to your employer for them, perhaps. And then there's various ratchets that can be turned in employment law, for example, public sector equality duty, which wouldn't apply in a private company most of the time. And then also you're looking at the ability to get a regulator to investigate somebody if they're a regulated professional, of which there's about 10 million or so people who are going to be regulated by their regulator.
Yes.
And then you've got the ability to just report you for alarming and distressing me as well.
Mm.
So you can turn all of those ratchets as somebody who's like, I don't like what you have to say, Dan. I think your politics is awful and I'd like to get you sacked. I'd like to inconvenience you with your regulator. And I'd also like to potentially give you a criminal conviction for alarming and distressing me. Those things those particular ratchets to turn need to be completely unpicked, and that's exactly what we've set out to do with this bill.
Right, okay. I mean, I'm probably a bad example for reporting me to my bosses for my political opinions, because honestly, about every day there are dozens of people in the comments who are trying to get me in trouble with Carl for something I've said. Yes, but I totally take your point. 18,000, whatever it is, arrests or convictions, what it was, and maybe 4,000 of those we might actually agree with. Extreme, so many, many thousands left. And what about jailings? Because every so often on social media, you see somebody point out that we've jailed more people for free speech than Russia or China or...
I think that's the same stat, though. It's okay. The convictions under the Public Order Act.
Oh, I see.
Which we do, on paper, seem yes. to send more people to... Not to jail, necessarily, because all of those people won't be going to jail. But we are convicting more people of a criminal offence of a speech kind than many places and on the other side of the Berlin Wall.
And I don't know if this is right, because it sounds so extreme, but apparently we convict more people of speech issues in this country than we do in China. And when I say more, I don't mean more per capita, more per head of population. I literally mean more.
I can't speak to that, but I wouldn't be overly surprised if we do actually... Yes. The criminal justice system has been turned into basically a grievance process when it comes to speech offences, because it is often that people report their political adversaries to the police, and then the criminal justice system ceases to be this arbiter of what you would expect of lawful conduct, and they start to be the arbiter of interpersonal grievances at a level they shouldn't be.
Yes, I know some police officers, and one of them worked had a patch working on a sort of council estate in one of our cities. And when I asked him what he does, and he says, "Well, I'm a social worker. I go around and have to speak to people, knock on doors, because they've sent a tweet to one of their friends or relatives or neighbours, and the other person has reported it to the police, and that somehow becomes his problem."
So a lot of it is dealt with in a community way like that when somebody is reported to the police. Now, there's times when, and this bill that we've put together preserves it, harassment, for example, that should be preserved, I think, in the criminal law. If you are pursuing a seriously long course of conduct, it's only two instances is required for criminal harassment. That is deliberately to intimidate, to make somebody feel like they are going to have immediate harm done to them. That should still be preserved as an offence.
I mean,
a lot of that stuff does get dealt with by social workers rather than in court. People will be round to say, "You do understand that you've upset this person."
So in the cases that I'm talking about, my friend would mainly be dealing with, one woman sending another woman on her estate a text, words to the effect of "Stay away from my boyfriend, you slag," and that would be repeated more than once, and then apparently that's a police issue. But yes.
Well, it isn't really, is it? It's a personal issue.
Yes. Okay, so. We've got a serious problem with convicting and also jailing people. Actually, before I move off this point, did you happen to see something I did with Sam Melia?
I saw the two of you photographed together last week, yes.
Are you familiar with his case?
So it was Public Order Act Part 3, Section 19, that they attempted to and successfully did convict Sam under.
Right.
I've never met Mr. Melia. Yes. But I'm aware of that particular dastardly section of the Act that we suggest we repeal.
Yes.
That the conviction was brought under, and the prosecution was brought under. So that particular section is interesting, because it is the offence of stirring up racial hatred. Racial hatred isn't particularly well defined. It's not defined in the statute. Mm. And then to actually make out the offence, it's either that somebody intended to stir racial hatred or that it was likely that racial hatred would be stirred up. So that second leg, that optional second leg requires that an imaginary observer is potentially stirred to hatred upon seeing something that they haven't seen, and there may in fact be no evidence that they did. So we're dealing in the realm of imaginary complainants. To put it properly, it's imagining an observer and imagining in their mind that they would be stirred to hatred, which isn't defined.
Now this imaginary observer, would be conjured in the head of a woke state employee. I mean, it wouldn't be in a sensible person's head, this imaginary reasonable observer.
The reasonable man test is often applied in these situations, and it's called an objective test. Obviously, you and I can see that that is not true, and you're again imagining a reasonable man.
Well, I mean, yes, you've got reasonable man, reasonable woman, leftists, state woke employees, and quite frankly, they're a long way from reasonable. So, I mean, these people are lunatics. I mean, we cover that all the time.
When you're able to define what reason is by the culture of a place, then that test ceases to be objective anymore. I've used in that bill the phrase a person of reasonable firmness, because I think that's slightly more to the point of what we're looking for. Would a person of reasonable firmness be stirred to racial hatred if they saw, say, a sticker in the case of Mr. Melia? And if they wouldn't, then that offence wouldn't be made out. But just if any observer would be, will do.
Or any hypothetical observer.
Of course, hypothetical.
Can you imagine any scenario in which a person might be offended possibly? I mean,
that's almost the realm we're in with that one. Now, I should say, and I should make this clear, that Part 3, Section 19 of the Public Order Act is very infrequently used. And among the 15,000 to 18,000 convictions that take place for expression under that act, it makes up about 5 a year. So it's sparingly used. And it's only really used to make an example of somebody. And I sympathise greatly with Mr. Melia's case because it seems that that was exactly
what he was one of the 5 to be made example of. Well, I mean, that's got me worried now because I've no idea who the other 4 were.
Nor do I, off the top of my head. And Lucy Connolly was, of course, convicted under that. She pled guilty, which is an important distinction. She was encouraged to plead guilty under that exact section, Part 3, Section 19. Starmer, upon entering office in 2024, ramped up the use of this section, perhaps encouraging the CPS to do so during and after the Southport unrest following the stabbings and the reaction to that. So there was actually double digits use of that. But it's a sparingly used part of the Public Order Act. The one that really makes the meat and potatoes is Section 4, 4A and 5, which are, have you alarmed and distressed me? Either you as a person have alarmed and distressed me through your own conduct, or perhaps you've got a sign, which is Section 5, a sign or a flag that may have alarmed or distressed me. Those are the ones that make up the anywhere between 12 and 18,000 convictions a year. They're the ones that the flagging type, there was a lot of putting up of flags on lampposts, often without permission from the property owners.
Did any of them get prosecuted?
I don't believe that anyone was prosecuted under Section 5, but there was at least one arrest. It was the, I believe it was the Flag Force campaign chap who, I might be getting that wrong, but there was an arrest under Section 5 of the Public Order Act 1986 for, this is a piece of signage, incidentally the St. George's flag, which has caused alarm and distress, and that is all we have to tell you. We're arresting you and we're going to hold you. And that's all they require. Whether it would be made out in a court of law is another matter, but you can inconvenience someone considerably by simply reporting them for having alarmed and distressed you. That needs to go, and we've made very clear in that bill that there is no right to being offended and therefore having the police act on your behalf to rectify that offence.
If you enjoyed that content, and of course you did because you are a smart person, then why don't you go over to lotuseaters.com where you can watch the whole episode for as little as £5 a month, which really is not much money at all, and you get loads of really good content.